The last story, the last talk before the break is Dr. Richard Wu from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Some years ago, images of comets seemed to show something going on in the solar system that came to be called the solar wind. And studying the solar wind has an interaction with solar coronal observations and eclipses that we will now hear about. Dr. Wu.
I'm sort of an outsider, but I have witnessed the eclipse a couple of times, and I have been involved in some experiments. And today what I'm going to talk to you about is the solar eclipse pictures and the solar wind. And the purpose of my talk is I'd like to bridge the gap between, you know, eclipse chasers and scientists to kind of help you understand what it is that the eclipse pictures really tell us and how we go about studying them. First of all, so my purpose of the talk is to give you some impression as to what we can learn about the sun's atmosphere from these eclipse pictures. And most importantly, I would like to emphasize talking about understanding the imaging effects, because while we have pretty pictures, oftentimes there are imaging effects included in there, and sometimes those can mislead scientists. And so they represent, I'd like to talk about the perils of interpreting eclipse pictures. And as a matter of fact, I would like to show you why there has been a misconception of the origin and evolution of the solar wind for three decades, because basically this came from solar eclipse pictures. So what do solar pictures show? They basically show this white light scattered, as we have heard. This basically measures the sun's atmosphere. So we do learn about the sun's atmosphere. But also included in this image are the effects of imaging. And I've itemized some of them here. First of all, there's a sensitivity issue here. Obviously, the corona extends all the way out, as we have seen in more recent pictures. But the reason why the corona is confined here is simply because beyond that is noise, and the instrument is not detecting a signal. Another thing is that some people use radio density gradient filters. We've heard about that. How does that affect what we're seeing? Spatial resolution, of course, is very important. As we just heard Serge say, we really need higher spatial resolution to see the smaller scales, because what we see is not all that's in the corona. And, of course, image processing is very important, as we've heard in this conference. And what are those effects on the picture that we see? So let me first talk about what we can learn about the atmosphere. Well, in terms of the atmosphere, of course, all we're measuring is white light. White light is scattered by the density in the corona, and the brightness, wherever it's bright, means that the density is high. We are not observing anything else. All we're doing is observing the distribution of density. But we use these pictures to interpret. And we now know that the corona is magnetic. It's sort of obvious in the trace pictures. We see the close loops of magnetic fields. We know that the corona is magnetic. We now know that there's a solar wind flow, we've known that since the early 1960s, when the actual solar wind flow was confirmed by direct measurements by spacecraft. So what we're seeing in this picture is not just stationary density, but density that's moving out and accelerating. And included in here are magnetic fields and the interaction of the magnetic fields to produce the density. So what we're interpreting really is very, very indirect. Now, why is corona imaging challenging? Many speakers here have alluded to this, and I'd like to demonstrate it with a profile. And basically, it's important always when you're looking at pictures to also look at the quantitative profiles to be able to understand what you're seeing in the corona. So this is actually a 1954 eclipse done by Waldmeier, and these are the profiles that he got. And he got, in terms of brightness, as a function of solar radius, the brightness, this is an order of magnitude. So you see the brightness falls very, very quickly close to the sun. And so there's many orders of magnitude in this very short distance in the corona. So when you take pictures, you have to have a very large dynamic range, and it simply is quite difficult to capture all of that light. The other thing here is, let me see, the next page here. Basically, the corona, what we saw here is the shape of a corona. And as I mentioned, this has to do with the sensitivity of the instrument. So this corona, the shape here, is more like an isophote, a contour of constant density, or the constant density level that corresponds to the threshold sensitivity of the instrument. And what I'd like to do is show you that if we go back and look at the profiles, the top profile here is in the equatorial region. So it drops a little more slowly in density than the profile in the polar region. And this is the reason why you have a non-symmetric shape. So in the equator, the density drops more slowly. And if we go back here and draw the threshold level that corresponds to this picture, you see that the equator it extends to about less than 2 solar radii. If you go down here, and in the polar region, it's a little bit less. So the shape in the corona really only reflects these quantitative profiles, and you can see that the difference is simply due to the fact that in the equator, the density falls off more slowly, and in the polar region, it falls off more quickly. So I've already mentioned the sensitivity. So we know that the corona is not finite in extent, and the fact that it has a shape really has to do with just the instrument sensitivity. So the shape basically represents the corona's variation in extent. And what I just described before, the shape of the corona reflects an isophote or of the instrument's threshold sensitivity. Donald Menzel was mentioned, his book was mentioned, and I've taken the liberty here to copy a couple of his pages in his book, where he showed a very nice collection of eclipse pictures. And these were basically taken between 1908 and 1954. And as we heard from earlier speakers, some people might have even thought that this was the golden age in the 1950s, the golden age of eclipse pictures, and not more could have been done by not more could have been done, and simply because I guess the pictures looked all kind of similar. Of course, the shapes did change, and they changed with solar cycle, and it just reflected the change in the density fall off. But basically, the corona was surrounded the sun. Now, in contrast to this, starting in about 1966, Gordon Newkirk at HAO came up with this nice idea of a radial density gradient filter. I didn't want to say that. I just wanted to, first of all, start off with this collection of pictures that were done at HAO and were collected between 1966 and 1994. And of course, they look very different from the previous pictures. And now I wanted to tell you that the difference is that they used the radial density gradient filter, and it was a very very innovative idea in the sense that I'll explain it a little bit later. And I just want to show that I have some, I collected some images here that show the difference between using the radial density gradient filter, the ones down here, and the radial density filter was not used in the pictures up there. And you can see the dramatic difference. Without the filter, the corona is really surrounds the sun, as we all know. But if you look at the pictures here with the gradial density filter, you can see that there are regions that appear to be have no corona. They're dark, and of course there's a lot of structure. So let's take a little closer look again at the quantitative profiles. These are not the profiles for this picture, but it still illustrates what I'm trying to say. In the earliest picture there, I showed the threshold level being rather high, and the corona was fairly close to the sun. Here I'm showing a threshold level that's lower. And the reason why I'm doing that is because with the radial density filter, the radial density filter basically follows the average of the corona. So it sort of takes out the average of the corona and in effect increases the dynamic range of the film or the camera. And so that's why you can see out to further distances. But basically, you are still limited here by sensitivity of the instrument. And the sensitivity of the instrument now is at a lower level. And you can see that the separation between the equator and the pole is a lot larger in terms of distance. So in other words, along this line, the density gradient may be quite low, but all you have to do is move a little bit over the profile and the distances separate. So this basically kind of reflects the extent of the corona and represents the threshold sensitivity level of the instrument. So one has to be very careful that when you use the radial density filter, you basically are still watching seeing the corona, but the shape of the corona, however, still represents the sensitivity threshold of the instrument. It is not necessarily caused by magnetic fields. Don't forget, I have not brought magnetic fields in yet. This is still density, and this is the effect of the instrument. Okay, so another feature of imaging is, as we have seen in this meeting, is image processing. So Serge Kouchmi also came up with some very nice ideas of tracing density gradients. Basically, it's sort of like edge enhancement of the picture, and he did this a long time ago. And of course, this started the whole series of pictures that now reveal a lot of structure. So again, this is image processing, and we have to understand what the image processing itself does to the picture. In other words, is it just pulling out selected structures, or is it pulling out all of the structures in the corona? And of course, as we've heard Hanna give some show some of his pictures, her pictures, Serge, of course, provided this picture of the 1999 solar eclipse. And whereas before, maybe it wasn't so clear without the processing that you needed image spatial resolution. Now it's very clear that we need high spatial resolution. So this means it begs the question, okay, are these the smallest structures in the corona, or are there smaller structures in the corona? So up until now, all I've done is talk about the images themselves. I have not talked about interpretation. So now I'm going to tell you how the solar wind people deduce the origin and evolution of the solar wind from these pictures. In other words, how they interpreted the pictures. So they started out, of course, with the radial density gradient filter picture. Because it simply looked like it had a lot more structure to it. And it just seemed like it was all being, it all reflecting magnetic fields. But we don't really know that. And we don't have any way of checking it either, because there are no magnetic field measurements in the corona. The magnetic field measurements are only at the photosphere. And as we have heard, people have taken those magnetic fields and extrapolated them out using models. But those models have never been checked against magnetic field measurements because there simply aren't any. So in the beginning, in, after these pictures started appearing, people started interpreting them. And what they did was it certainly looks like they are magnetic field lines. And they started drawing pictures like this. They started calling these streamers. And these certainly looked like they were closed, and the plasma seemed to be trapped inside. Whereas here, these looked like they were open, and they certainly looked like they had open field lines. And the pictures themselves showed plume-like structures there. And then came along emission measurements that we heard about today. The one discovery from these emission measurements was that the sun had dark regions in these emission images at the poles, and these were called coronal holes. They were dark because they had low emission. And people started interpreting those again. And what they started, how they interpreted it was that, first of all, it's only a dark region in the high temperature emission measurement. If you go to a lower temperature measurement in the chromosphere, you don't see those coronal holes. So you basically see dark regions in the million degree temperature plasma. And then they started, because of the polar plumes, they decided that this was the only region of open field lines. And this is the schematic that's drawn here. So only open magnetic field lines come out of the polar region. And basically the streamer region, the streamers were closed, strictly closed. So the solar wind came out of the polar regions and then diverged and flowed down towards the equator. And notice that this is the radial density gradient filter image. It's from HAO, and this is the LASCO image. So this is the kind of picture that they put together. Now we would try to see what they measure in the solar wind itself. Now, the problem with the solar wind measurements is that, first of all, up until this Ulysses mission, all the spacecraft were limited to the ecliptic plane. So all we observed was the solar wind directly by interplanetary spacecraft near the ecliptic plane, and no closer to the sun than 0.3 AU. We still have not gotten close to the sun, but with Ulysses went out of the ecliptic plane, and we got our first measurements of the solar wind outside of the ecliptic plane. And this is the Ulysses velocity measurements. This is just showing one picture during this period. But these data were taken over a year, and basically its solar wind speed equals this is 1,000 kilometers per second, so we have very fast wind over the poles, and very slow wind that seem to be associated with the streamers. And this kind of confirmed what they had envisioned, that the coronal holes were the only open field regions. So the solar wind, the fast wind, or most of the solar wind came out of the polar regions and just expanded super radially and filled the whole higher latitude heliosphere with fast wind. And then the slow wind was basically confined to near the ecliptic plane during the solar minimum, and it was associated with these streamers. So everything seemed to confirm what they thought was happening. Okay, so now, first of all, I would like to take that same picture, and then what we did was we took the HAO picture and enhanced the turned up the gain. Because you see the radio density filter pushes back the corona. That's why the corona doesn't look like there's any corona in the polar regions, when there in fact is. So their imagination of this coronal hole and has this channel going out into the heliosphere is really incorrect, because there is plasma there. And in fact, what we have found is that the solar wind really flows from the entire sun, and that the magnetic field is more predominantly radio, and the flow is predominantly radio. And I'm not going to go into all the details of how we showed that, because we have many different kinds of data to show that. Rather, I would like to show you what the eclipse picture shows us in terms of the solar wind speed. So you see here, the corona doesn't extend very far, so that means the density drops very, very fast. And density and velocity are more or less anti-correlated, so that means that this is fast wind. And in the case of the streamer, the density falls off most slowly here along the equator. That means that the velocity also accelerates the least fast, and that's why this is the if one measures the solar wind speed here, one finds that the solar wind speed is the slowest. And you can see that if we look at this picture here, it's a little bit extends a little bit farther, so the wind is still fast, but it's slower than the fast wind over the coronal hole. And if one goes in and looks at the Ulysses data more carefully, one sees that over the pole, the wind is fastest, and over here, the wind is about 100 kilometers per second slower. And then this just reflects the slower speed that one sees. The irony of all of this is that what I've shown you is what has misguided a scientist is the fact that we process the picture, we use the radio density filter. And in fact, if you go back to 1898, Annie Maunder made this famous picture in which she sees the streamers extending very far away. But basically, you see that the corona surrounds the corona surrounds the sun, and this picture is really one that's easier for us to interpret. It tells us that the solar wind speed is the slowest here. It's still quite slow over here. It's faster in these polar regions, and basically, this is what it tells us about the solar wind speed. Okay, now, one thing as a result of this conference, I noticed that everybody was talking about the small-scale structures. I've done a lot on small-scale structures using so-called radio occultation measurements. And I just wanted to include this, make this point. I didn't want to tell you about it because it would just be too much information. But basically, in the radio occultation measurements, we have a spacecraft that's behind the corona. We measure the corona at a point, such as a point in the corona here. And we have two kinds of measurements. We have the ranging measurements and Doppler measurements. And the ranging basically gives us distance to the spacecraft, and Doppler gives us the speed. But these measurements are extremely useful because they are very they have very high signal to noise ratio, as in contrast to the white light measurements that are more limited by noise. And what I wanted to say is that if we in the radio measurements, when we measure at a point, we see these structures, and as the sun rotates, these structures cross our radio path, which is transverse to the plane of the sky here. And if we have a very high temporal if we sample it very quickly, we see very small scale structures. And basically what we see are structures that are three orders of magnitude smaller than the structures here. The smallest structures are 1 milliarcsecond, whereas the structures in this picture are only 1 arcsecond. And it's those fine scale structures that we have actually also traced the solar wind flow and show that the solar wind emanates from the entire sun. Okay, so these are my conclusions. I want to emphasize that images, as we probably know, for the sake of doing science, images do not convey understanding by themselves. First of all, we were only measuring density, and from that we're inferring solar wind flow, we're inferring magnetic fields, but we're only measuring density. And what we always need to do is to have other kinds of measurements and compare them with the images, be it measurements of density or even measurements, if possible, of magnetic fields and solar wind flow. And that's what we have been doing. And scientists need to understand imaging and processing effects before they jump into interpreting the images. They really need to know what the signal-to-noise ratio is of their images, and before they start interpreting the density, the density structure. And the use of the radio density gradient filter really is the reason why it led to the misconception of the origin and evolution of solar wind. Basically, the current view is that it comes from coronal holes. So during solar minimum, it comes out of the poles. But at solar maximum, the coronal holes kind of disappear, and then it becomes a problem as to where the solar wind comes from during solar maximum. The filamentary structures are a major feature, and I just wanted to emphasize again that with the radio occultation measurements, we show them as small as a milliarc second. And finally, it's obvious from this conference that we need to improve, in terms of imaging, we need to improve the resolution and of the imaging, and we also need to determine the noise levels of the images so that we can incorporate them into our interpretation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any comments, questions? We have known that there have been some coronal holes in mid-latitudes. So the coronal holes are always in the poles and sometimes in middle latitudes. So it's not that.
Right, no. In fact, the first the confirmation of the coronal hole fast wind association was made before. It was made with spacecraft measurements in the ecliptic plane, when there was a coronal hole that extended down.
Comments? Questions? Well, thank you very much. Yeah.